In today's quest, we learn that it is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life. And this is the quest for power. Welcome back to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are your hosts, Scott and Michael, and we will continue our story through the struggle for Italy and ultimately the Ostrogothic crown. So now with our intro out of the way, let's talk about the business side here. So like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram at Quest for Power Pod, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. Okay. All that good stuff, because, you know, we enjoy likes, and also so that way you can continue to get better notifications for our content. All that good stuff. You're in the algorithms. You know what you're talking about. So, all right, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the segment, yeah?
Yeah. So what have you been up to? I mean, you did kill someone in D&D yesterday, which was quite entertaining. It was actually pretty fun.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I forgot about our intro course here, where we're having an appetizer. So I felt kind of bad about this. So it's one of the few times where, like, I have a player death and I feel like genuinely bad about it, because I felt that there are a couple things. One is that because we play it on a bi-weekly basis, it makes it harder for a lot of stuff to stick.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of stuff that, like, did mildly allude to the death trap, as it were. But it was said 2 weeks ago, and that's that can be difficult to remember. So it kind of felt to me, playing it through, like seeing it out in practice, was it felt a little bit out of the blue.
Yeah, I don't think any of us saw that coming until it happened. Like, we knew something great wasn't going to be at the bottom of it, but I don't think we saw that coming out, because it was kind of a fun little twist, though, when you got to see the other end of whatever portal you created.
Yeah. For the reference, it was a big, I guess, door or drain that opens up at the bottom of the ocean, and all of these characters get sucked in due to this new space being opened. Lots of water pouring in, throwing the characters through. Now, the characters have various options to try and resist this this torrent and this flow of water. And ultimately, we had one player who was arguably the most athletic in the group. We proceeded to fail again and again and again.
Yep.
And at the bottom, there was a big black sphere that all this water was dumping into, and for seasoned players, this rings a lot of red bells in their minds, because this is usually what they call a sphere of annihilation, which destroys all matter, like, entirely. So something you do not want to come in contact with it. And ultimately, he failed. The good news was it wasn't a sphere of annihilation. He did not instantly perish. Instead, it was a portal that went to somewhere else at the bottom of the ocean.
Or he was crushed to death.
And that is where ocean pressure took its toll. And we had a tortle monk, make his end at the bottom of the ocean in some unknown location.
Yep.
But it's quite interesting. But I think that there was like a little like riddle, I suppose, or a rhyme that alluded to it a couple of weeks prior.
I can see that now that I remember it, but I don't think any of us saw that coming. I think we all just kind of went, well, the water's sucking us in, so
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. So it felt a little bad, but the good news is that the player character or the person who's playing him has been playing since a very young age and has taken it pretty well in stride and seems to be looking forward to a new character. So we'll have the privilege of whatever interesting character he creates next.
It was funny that another player wanted to die but couldn't quite pull it off.
Well, yeah, without making it too forced.
Yeah.
So, well, that's just how the dice roll.
Alrighty, let's start out with, well, the potatoes of this, and that being the sources. Got to eat those first. And we have the histories of Procopius from the Romans' point of view, as we discussed last week. He is alive at this time, and he's writing for Justinian, the Roman emperor's ego. So it's pretty heavily favored towards Rome. And then after that, he recants everything that happened in a secret history book. So we don't know what is the real truth. We have a lot of guesses as to what could have happened. And then we have the ever so present Jordanes, who everyone loves to bash in terms of historical sources. So we got that also going for us. Dubious sources, you know. Typical for 5th century Europe, 4th, 6th century Europe. So, previously, Scott, do you recall what has happened previously on our little journey?
All right. Let's see. We had another Theo name. Yeah, Theodahad. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
All right.
Yep. Yeah, your favorite, your Theo names.
That's right. So, Theodahad was our fellow that was after our queen with a long name, I think, yes.
Amalasuntha.
So, Amalasuntha. I almost said Theodegotha, but that's a...
that's a different... That's
a different person.
Is that our sister? I think it's her...
Or daughter, one of the two.
Yeah, one of the...
I think it might have been a daughter. Anyways, so he... was caught up in a potential assassination of his former co-ruler, although dubious at best, has to deal with the beginnings of war over this, and also Justinian poking his nose in where it don't belong. And
you be doing that.
Oh gosh, let's see what else. He also got, he was assassinated, right?
Yeah, he basically did nothing.
Yeah, I remember he didn't do much, so I kind of had to skip.
Yeah, he basically went, all right, go ahead, Rome, just destroy Naples.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the government was not literally doing anything to protect the people. And so then Rome just waltzes in and messes everything up. And then, our poor king gets assassinated. And the rest is history.
That is true. And with that, we are on to the main quest. All rise and due respect to Vitiges the Unlucky, King of the Ostrogoths. As always, we don't know when Vitiges was born because he was not of a royal house. Sources have guessed because of his age at certain times in history that it was around the 6th century is when he was born. He married into the royal house Amali to Matasuntha, who, if you remember previously, is Amalasuntha's daughter. So you have the Theo kings, and then we have the Sunthas for the women in this kingdom.
Interesting.
And as we discussed, after Theodahad put up zero resistance to the invading Romans, the Gothic nobility went, get out. And they named Vitiges king, and he was able to become a king due to his marriage to Matasuntha. So he basically married to become king, which is kind of interesting. That normally doesn't, you normally don't think that would happen. Normally it's like you would just take someone else's household, right? Or am I thinking this wrong here? Have you heard of other people where they marry to become king of like over, like to be over them, not like king consort or prince consort. They become like the king.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've heard of that. Usually like the royalty happens further down the line if you marry and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get in some level of like royalty and then just things just kind of happen. You know, the dominoes and the Tetris blocks fall into place. But I don't think I've seen a more direct route like that.
Yeah, that's quite impressive if you think about it. When I was researching, I never thought of that, but now I just thought of that. That's kind of odd. That's already a notch under his belt. He married it to become a king. His first act as king was to murder Theodahad. So, and you know, good riddance. Okay,
not an all-star.
Technically, he ordered him to be brought to him dead or alive, but
it's one option is easier.
yeah, the person whose job it was thought, dragging his body all the way back, and then we execute him. It's just too much work. So, and unfortunately, like, this is the name of the game. You have to eliminate any possible threats to your rule, even if they just want to focus on their poetry like Theodahad wanted to. And for some reason, he decided to take the throne in the middle of a big Gothic war between the Ostrogoths and the Romans, and his predecessor left him with a giant mess to clean up. I mean, Rome has invaded the borders of this once proud kingdom, and they are just cleaning up house and just, you know, conquering vast amounts of territory in Italy at a rapid
strong
race.
Strong sense of civic duty.
Yes, yeah. Immediately, he sprang into action. He summoned every able man across the kingdom. He armed them, gave them a horse, with the exception of the garrison in Gaul, who he's like, you guys just stay on guard duty because we don't know what the Franks are going to do, and we'd rather not, you know, be caught with our pants down.
Boy, this feels like foreshadowing.
I can neither confirm nor deny. I mean, he's already doing way better than Theodahad.
Yeah. Look at that. You got higher than three.
Yeah. I think he's already going to beat him in terms of the rankings. He sent 4,000 of his men to Rome in preparation from the oncoming attack from Belisarius. If you remember, Belisarius is the general. He landed in Italy. He is the previous general who took out the Vandals, so he's an impressive dude. And so, again, he's doing something about an oncoming threat. Another good thing. Unfortunately, the city of Rome's Gothic garrison needed the populace to support them because, I don't know if you know this, Rome's a massive city. And their long stretched walls weren't exactly the greatest at this time after years of decay. So, you know, you would need the populace to be able to, you know, defend yourselves under a siege.
Yeah.
And the populace, who they're like, no, I'm not a fan of being an Ostrogothic subject. I've been a Roman my entire life. You know, I go to hell. And with that, the Goths were defeated, and without the garrison was kind of SOL, and Rome fell to Belisarius, and the Eternal City was back in Roman hands. It only took them 60 years to get it back.
Yeah, one lifetime.
Yes, yeah, or several kings' lifetimes.
Well, that's much less. That's much less long lived.
That is true. Belisarius, like, basically recalled most of his forces in Italy to Rome and kind of regroup and, like, you know, like, reset the campaign. Let hit the restart button. But yet you're going to be farther along ahead. Vitiges received the news of loss of Rome after the messenger came by telling him that another messenger told him that a Roman force was spotted in Tuscany. For those looking in a map in their head, Tuscany is the region Florence, Italy is in. And this force was led by Bassus, the Roman force, who was of Gothic descent, but he did not follow Theodoric the Great into Italy when Theodoric marched over. So he was kind of left. So he kind of stayed Roman. In the response, Vitiges sent a force to Dalmatia. Remember, this is the land east of the Adriatic Sea. And they retook the city of Salona, which was previously wrested from Gothic control when Theodahad did nothing with his life. And then he himself took 2,000 to 30,000 men to Rome. That is what the sources say. In terms of numbers of soldiers, you can say this for any ancient battle, you have to take that with a grain of salt. We have zero idea the actual numbers for these kind of thing. And a lot of them like to, you know, make it sound way bigger. So if like they attacked them or if they were defeated, it seemed, you know, way more impressive for the Romans.
Yeah. Well, makes sense. Propaganda and runs deep in our history.
So Scott, if you're looking to punish Rome and to really, you know, cut them loose and put the screws to him, what are you first going to do after, you know, you get to Rome?
After you get to Rome?
Ugh. Yeah. What are you going to do to try and create hardship for the population? Besides the standard, you know, siege, don't let anyone in and out.
Yeah. So we're sieging. We haven't broken in yet.
Correct.
All right. That's interesting. We could start flinging stuff into the walls. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, you could do that.
Makes me think of like fling scary things, demoralizing things. Like, makes me think of like Lord of the Rings where they flung like decapitated heads. Over the walls.
Unfortunately for them, there's no plague victims to hurl over the walls yet.
That's a shame. Yeah, that's just practical. That's just practical warfare. No, you gotta just do scary things. I mean, you could try and mess with their water supply, yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. I mean, water, think about it. Water you need, 2 to 3 days, no water, you're dead. So he cut the aqueducts that were leading, and that reduced Belisarius's garrison because they had to get him out of the, you know, that city because of they couldn't supply them with all that water.
Yeah. I guess I didn't think it'd be that's so crazy that it was that easy to, you know, get to the aqueducts, right? You think that would be like the most secure line, but I guess if it wasn't designed to be fortified, right? Like if Rome is so big that if it wasn't built for fortification, then
I was gonna say,
you know, aqueducts being undefended would be
this would be like our sewer systems. Like our sewer systems aren't exactly, you know, defended, you know.
Well, that's not fair because, you know, our cities are not designed for sieges because sieges these days are kind of like,
well, that's what I mean. Rome wasn't exactly designed for a siege.
Yeah.
They were, you know, the aqueducts, I mean, think about it. Back then, Rome was like this big metropolitan. So, you know, the water, they didn't really need to think, you know, when they first built these, you know, Rome was this flourishing powerhouse. Like the borders were, you know, way past anything. They could never imagine anyone attacking Rome. So, yeah. And then, you know, this is, it's kind of doesn't have its same glory. They don't have the same infrastructure anymore. So therefore it's just easier to cut those and to destroy those. Although that'd be kind of a pain. I don't know what they use, like pickaxes probably.
I mean, you could probably, depending on like how easy they are to reach, you could probably just like stop it with like rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
And just clog it up, divert it. Yeah. Break it.
Divert it and give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably you just stop it, right? Like you just, throw that, a bunch yeah. of like rocks and stuff in there, and like
yeah, that's probably what I would try and do.
Yeah, as far as like if you're talking like a water line going in.
Yeah. So Vitigas did that. So that's a, you know, that's really smart, really good. He outnumbered his opponents 2-1, according to the sources. However, he didn't have enough men, and this is going to become a big problem in a lot of medieval sieges, to surround the city.
Oh, yeah.
There's just not enough soldiers in these times. And so he had to set 7 camps to hold the siege. 1 each Horcrux. I'm sorry. Not sorry. But there were significant gaps in his blockade. So yeah, you
messengers
know,
can get through.
Messengers can get through. Supplies can get through, especially like at night. So they knew they could not outlast Rome. It was nearly impossible. So he began preparations to invade the city. So with this, he set everything in motion. He began the assault with the siege towers, ladders, and rams. So he went all in with siege equipment. Like he threw the kitchen sink at them. After ferocious fighting between the two sides, the siege engines were destroyed, and Vitigas had to be content to sit and blockade the city, even though he couldn't seal the gap. So he kind of failed on that, but, you know, I kind of get what he had to do. He couldn't exactly sit there all day long, so he tried.
Yeah, gotta build more engines and try again next time.
Exactly. His opponent, though, Belisarius, he's not exactly the dumbest general. He liked to keep the Goths on their toes. So what he kept doing is while they're trying to build these siege engines, he would send out his own troops and keep harassing the attackers.
Yeah.
So these quick little skirmishes would break out. And on top of that, they have, you know, they have their arrow, their archers up on the walls, so they can, you know, even go after the Goths and harass them from there as well.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I'm thinking in the right mind, because I was thinking that too. It's
yeah.
bold to expose some guys, though, because if you're outnumbered, you've finite manpower resource.
I think he was fine. Again, unfortunately, generals have to think this way. It's why Grant won the Civil War. He was thinking to sacrifice those men to draw Vitigas out into the big, open, full-blown engagement, you know, attacking Rome with the walls and all of it, their forces back. And then he could land a decisive blow against the Goths and finally be done with them. But alas, Vitigas never took the bait.
Good for him.
So after all this is going on for a while, you know, this is not fun for anyone involved.
No, it's arguably the most miserable thing you could be doing at the time.
Belisarius's men and the citizens of Rome are tired of this nonsense. I mean, could you imagine just every day this is your new life now, of, you know, just fighting outside the walls and knowing you can't go anywhere. You're essentially in a prison, a loosely guarded prison, but a prison no less.
No, some things never change.
And
plenty of folks these days got that. You know, it's got a similar story too, you know.
That I was thinking about that. Yep, yeah. So they started going to Belisarius, do something, and he went, as you wish. He sent a 2-pronged attack. He sent the main force, and they sallied out of the Salarian and Pincian gates. I cannot say those words. Those are the gates that are north of the city. So he sent to draw out the big force. And then at the same time, a small Moorish cavalry and Roman citizens came out of the Aurelian gates to stop Gothic reinforcements from coming in and, you know, hitting the flank of the Romans. And for a while this worked. The Romans gained an upper hand. Their archers were pushing back the Gothic cavalry from the rain of arrows. I mean, Don't matter how fast your horses are, they still get pierced by arrows along with the riders.
That's right.
The force that crashed onto the flank of Vitiges, and they kind of swept all those before him. So, like, the Roman citizens themselves are doing pretty well along with, you know, his cavalry. So this is not a great start for Vitiges. He's kind of getting his back pressed to the wall. And the Romans kept pressing their advantage, and then they got cocky. They landed at the Gothic camps. These citizens are not your highly disciplined soldiers. They're normal people who are just trying to live, live by. So they started looting the camp, the Gothic camp. And Vitiges saw an opening in this confusion, and then he basically sent in his reinforcements against them from a different force and massacred the looters. Absolutely destroyed them. So while that is going on, the two main forces are in brutal hand-to-hand combat. The Goths lost a substantial number of men and horses until the right wing of the force for the horses and infantry witnessed what was going on, and then they too fell on the Romans. They kind of like, wait, and they go. The Roman cavalry, though, the Roman cavalry was struck by the Gothic spears, and they were put to flight, and they were unable to hold off a Gothic cavalry charge. So they dropped their shields and ran back in the city. So Vitiges got somewhat of a victory. Unfortunately, Rome is still under Belisarius's control. They stopped an assault on his camp, but they didn't break the siege. So all that for nothing.
Yeah. Well, I have to see what the death toll is.
I don't know what the death toll is. They said it was high between, they said a lot of Gothic forces. The pro-Roman sources said that the Gothic forces lost like too many, like a vital amount.
Interesting.
I've seen some sources say that the Romans lost equal amount, and despite, it being the Roman sources try to portray this little battle as a Roman victory. When we just described it, it was clearly a Gothic victory. Just Rome was able to hold.
Yeah.
Well, the siege dragged on. Belisarius kept sending out skirmishes between these two sides, but there was no massive battle. Both camps were faced with starvation, and now diseases started running along the longer the siege dragged on. So Belisarius, though, despite being under siege, he received reinforcements. So clearly the seven camps just couldn't pull it. And then Vitiges received news that Belisarius then sent a detachment, probably fresh troops, and they started burning and pillaging the Gothic heartland north of Rome. So they circumvented the Gothic army and started attacking their backside and all of the defenseless towns that they could. And then a messenger came by with more bad news because, God forbid he actually have a win. For the city of Ariminum, which is modern day Rimini, fell. So, and this city was behind the Gothic line. So appearing in the news, Vitiges did not want to be caught in a pincer. So he broke the siege. He burned his camps. He couldn't even really take time to grab his supplies, and he fell back. So, not great. He's doing things right. It's just he doesn't have the supplies that Rome has.
Yeah, it just doesn't line up.
Yeah. So Belisarius continued his conquest. He conquered more towns such as Aemilia. Wow, that is how you say it. Aemilia, Urbinium, and he came up to Meledonium. I'm just going to say Milan. he came up to Milan sometime between 538 and 539. So he's conquered most of Italy up to this point.
Okay. No, that's, I mean, this is lining up with some of my recollection.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at this point.
Yeah. For those who know Belisarius, they probably know this story quite well. And yeah. So Vitiges, though, caught a break. So the Romans tried to take Milan, and they were unsuccessful in taking it. And then, you know, the failure of that caused a discord in the Roman leadership. They must have, you know, one person said, you know, he probably went, you know, oh, you did this wrong. No, you did this wrong. You know, pointing fingers.
Mm, politics.
Yeah. And just as soon as he caught his breath to regroup because of a stalemate, he received a message from his scouts that a huge army of the Franks were descending from the Alps. Yep. And headed their way. Good call on the foreshadow.
Saw that one coming. I mean, you know, at least he left his troops behind, his garrison behind, to just in case.
Yeah,
too bad. We're gonna find out how well this works.
Yeah, if you're a Vitiges, though, you probably be like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I would probably look to the heavens and went, what did I do to piss you off? Like, I worship you. I try and do things right. What do you want me to do?
I don't know. We're not seeing a whole lot of fervor in this summary. I'm not giving him a high score on his religious passion. No.
The Franks fell upon both armies with their fast troops, and they landed decisive blows to each faction. Because, you know, both factions are very war-torn from battling each other. What a weird turn of events, you know, and a great opportunistic move by the Franks. It's like a movie, and it's like a plot twist in the movie where these two rivals are at a stalemate, and all of a sudden, a faction that you've never heard of, or except for like you said, one little sentence in the beginning of the movie, just descends from the hills and just wipes them all out.
Yeah. Ugh.
And now you have the new big bad. However, just as quick as the Franks entered the fray, they had to retreat because of an outbreak of dysentery killed half of their men.
Oregon Trail all over again.
Yes. I do not. There's so many times they say, you know, outbreak of dysentery, and just what dysentery is. How casually the historical sources are like, yeah, they died of dysentery. Is like one of the most horrific things to die from, but yeah, they went away.
When you shove enough people in one location, that's going to be pretty much that's gonna happen. Dysentery's gonna happen.
I mean, yeah, even in like World War II, a big especially in World War I, like more people were killed by diseases than guns. So. I mean, in wars, that is often the battle of diseases. Who can outlast those?
Yeah, or, you know, even if you don't get killed by the disease, you certainly get weakened by it.
Yes.
You ain't going to be sleeping very well when you're having constant diarrhea from dysentery.
Yeah.
At least I wouldn't.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Again, this is really morbid, but do people live after dysentery in this age? Like, obviously now we probably could handle it, but
I think you can. Yeah,
can
I'm sure.
You
plenty
just
of people,
fight it off.
I'm sure
naturally?
People survived.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, the thing is you have to like replace your fluids.
Okay.
A big one. So, but that's like a thing. Is if you're on a battle, if you're you know around a battlefield, like your sources of water may be difficult, and so. This can be with quite a lot of diseases, to be honest, but like I think dysentery also falls in this classification of if you catch it, you and everybody else in the area is expelling an awful lot of fluids,
okay,
which is now contaminated. And so depending on your water sources and things, there's not a non-small chance that the water you're replacing your lost fluids with ingesting also just has more dysentery.
Gotcha. In it, yep.
Or whatever, yeah. the cholera. Virus or cholera is actually a very prime example of that. So I think that dysentery falls in that, where you just like, you have a fairly non-zero chance of like the stuff you're ingesting also may be contaminated. But yeah. I think it's like your odds of survival are pretty low, but if you keep replacing your fluids, you do have at least a non-zero chance of survival.
They need to start drinking mead.
Well, that's not very hydrating beverage.
No, but it might. It's not going to have dysentery in it.
No, it'll. If you drink enough of it, I guess it'll make you maybe feel better.
Yeah.
If you get drunk enough, you may just not care that you're bleeping off this mortal coil.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the movie now, everyone in the audience is like, what the hell was the point of that? And both of the camps looked at the Franks and went, after, you know, the shock wore off, went, okay, I guess we gotta, you know, let's regroup again. And Vitiges looked at his army, and then he looked at the reports of Roman forces, and then he looked again at his army, and he went, yeah, you know what? I get Theoda head now. I understand where he's coming from. I'm out of here. I'm going to Ravenna.
Ugh.
So Ravenna was going to be the last stand for the tired and battered and beaten Ostrogoths. Vitiges has been trying everything to weaken Justinian and get Belisarius off of Italy. He tried creating alliances with rulers that threatened Justinian's rule, with the ancient Roman and, you know, constant Roman enemies, the Sassanian Empire, basically the Persians is what he kept trying to get them to incite them to attack Rome. Okay. And, you know, to send more to create more of a strain on Justinian's forces. And basically, all of his efforts failed. He wasn't able to do anything. He tried and tried and tried until he was blue in the face. And for his effort, he was deposed as king. Justinian offered very generous terms of surrender. The Romans would take Italy south of the Po River, which is a lot, pretty much most of Italy, but he left the rest remaining to the Ostrogoths. So that includes the part east of Italy they would have as well, which is a huge amount of land, and you get to kind of keep your kingdom to fight another day. So, you know, I would take that, especially if you're doing everything you can and still losing. So the Ostrogothic court in Constantinople agreed to these terms, but Belisarius had other intentions. He wasn't satisfied. While he was in Ravenna, the Ostrogothic nobility offered him the title of Western Roman Emperor and make Vitiges a patrician. And he accepted this.
Yeah, so, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't really accept it, though. He pretended to accept it.
Of course.
Because Belisarius was loyal to Justinian to a fault. I mean, he was the most loyal dog Justinian could have ever asked for, despite how Justinian treats him. Vitiges was made patrician, but Belisarius grabbed him and Matasuntha, his wife, as hostages back to Constantinople in around 540.
Okay. Well, we'll see how good of a hostage treatment this is, because that's wildly variable treatments back in the day. Anywhere from, hey, you have, you know, you can be in like this, you know, building, city, whatever, you can't leave, or like you are in this room, you know, you're in this small area, you ain't getting out.
Yeah, you could be like, what is it, Romulus? No. Augustulus, where Odoacer basically said, gave him, you know, you get the nice luxury villa, just stay away.
Exactly.
Or you could be like Attalus, where your fingers are cut off each time that you defied Rome and sent on your way.
Hopefully it was not very many.
Yeah. So he returned. So once Belisarius returned to Italy, he followed through with his plan and he formally gave the Ostrogothic lands to Justinian. And sometime around 542, so like 2 years later, childless, Vitiges just dies. He died, yeah. Not really sure why. His wife, Matasuntha, was married off to a cousin of Justinian named Germanus. So that's kind of a nice little slap in the in the face after his death. And that's the really, really unfortunate anticlimactic end to the life and reign of Vitiges. You ready to rate him?
Yeah, let's get to it. Royal power.
How long do you think his reign was through all of that mess that we just went through?
I mean, it was a mess, but it didn't seem like it was like that long. You spend, you know, a couple years on like a siege and stuff, and I don't know. He's probably like a 10-year ruler. He bailed.
Yeah, you're a little what's that called? Over generous, too generous. Right. He ruled from 536 to 540, so around 4 years. So, yeah, you were right away when you're like,
he's short lived, but like you never can account for like the first like year or so if he like, you know, there's always like that weird limbo between like the first and last years.
Yeah, correct.
Where nothing kind of happens, but
yeah, like. I don't think we have exact dates right now. I'm sure once we get down to, you know, some of the, you know, later rulers, we'll be able to actually get down to the exact, you know, how many months, days, years.
It's a shame we're not doing U.S. presidents. That's a really easy guess.
Yeah.
50-50, baby. Kind of. Except for the ones that die early.
Yeah. And there's one... exception.
What's that?
Franklin Roosevelt, who served
four. Oh, that's
four
true.
Terms.
Yeah. He served four. And then you have, obviously, you have some that died early.
Yeah.
So, well, you know. All that's
right.
How the cookie crumbles. But all right.
Yeah.
Royal power. Let's talk about his wins and losses.
So, despite being dealt like the equivalent of a 2-7 offsuit poker hand for his reign, he held up pretty well against the imperial powerhouse and strategic mind that was Belisarius. Like, Belisarius had all the resources at his disposal, and he's a really good general as it is. On paper, he flat out lost the entire Gothic kingdom.
That's a pretty big loss.
That is a huge loss. I don't think he had a lot of power. I don't think he's a bad ruler. I think in different times he would have been a really good ruler. But
yep.
I can't give him too much here. How much are you thinking?
Yeah, wrong place at wrong time syndrome. I mean, I'll at least give like the slight props for kind of coming out of this alive and at least as, you know, patrician, right?
Yeah.
So there's well, something to be said, even if it's a hostage patrician.
Yeah, well, we don't know if he really came out alive. It's kind of suspicious that he died 2 years after capture.
That's fair. But I'm willing to give him, I don't know, like a 3.
Oh.
I know that like he's got like really bad marks, but like I think like the positives come from that. He was like pretty influential during his time, even though the time he ultimately, you know, is the end of the Ostrogothic kingdom, right? I feel like that's so damning. Knock it.
Yeah, that's why. Like, the only thing I can really, like, power-wise, like, he shows, like, he has control is basically when he called all the soldiers and he came.
Militarized the whole nation.
That demonstrates power. So I have to give him some points for that. I think only two. I can't give him too much more.
All right. I'm willing to go for a three on this. So three and a two for a five. All right. On to the next one. Infamy.
I could not find anything. He was a wartime king. He didn't have time
or the resources. Didn't have time for debauchery.
For debauchery, yeah.
All right. A whopping zero.
Zero.
All right. Easy. Religious passion.
Again, war doesn't allow you exactly to be a pious king. It's hard to build churches when your kingdom is being threatened constantly.
Didn't have mandatory prayer circles.
With extinction. I mean, he could have had that, but this isn't the Crusades, so
yeah.
he's focused on survival, not salvation.
Yeah. All right. Zero.
And zero. He was probably pretty pissed with God, to be honest.
Yeah, I would be. I'd be questioning my faith at this point.
Yeah. I'd be like, let's try that pagan thing again. That seems kind of...
All right. Stability.
What stability? His entire reign was war inside the kingdom, and he flat out lost.
Yeah. Yeah, that's zeros.
Zero.
All right. Royal demise.
His fate is unknown. My best guess is he was quietly killed. So his widow, Matasuntha, and very importantly, descendant of Theodoric, would be under Roman control. And being that she was married off right away to one of Justinian's cousins.
Yeah.
And we have no idea if she was for that or not. So
zero.
Yeah. Zero.
It's not looking good. All right. Legacy.
All right. So for the dynasty aspect, for his, you know, his royal household, he died childless and his wife was married off to the enemy. So yeah, his bloodline's not at great. An end. His character, though, remember Amalasuntha's episode? He was also in the same hit, which was slammed for not even attempting to put it on a historic foundation. I can't even remember what the name was, but he wasn't a very big part of this big hit, and Wikipedia just mentions that he was in it, but nothing that his character does.
Yeah. All right.
And he was also in an alternate history novel called Lest Darkness Fall. And based on the Wikipedia plotline, it looks like a really poorly written fan fiction of theory, of history, not theory, of history. Yikes.
I'm not willing to give him on that. we're not going to give him Mary Sue syndrome here.
No, I can't give him any points. He left nothing. No. Zero. This is a shame. Nada.
Or as reasonably good as this guy is, it's just
so, you know, just because he's scored a whopping 5 points,
you know how well he did when you didn't even need to ask for the
I
score.
Didn't I didn't even need to ask for it, despite being awarded a whopping 5 points, he still has his fate to be determined. Should he be crowned as the highest of kings, just become a minor little lord at court, or be burned at the stake? I don't think he deserves to be burned. I mean, he did a really good job.
He gets his minor lord.
Yeah, I agree. All right.
Yeah, well, it's good. He did good stuff. Reasonable tactician. And ultimately, just did not have all of the right resources at hand. And then still managed to come out alive by running away, where there's some some kind of points for that too. So
yeah, he must have broke like 1,000 mirrors because he had the opposite of luck.
Yeah, yeah. Or just cursing literally everyone in before him.
Yeah,
because like it, I mean, you have to think about his historical hindsight being that if Amalasuntha wasn't so like I guess so in bed with Rome, then there wouldn't be nearly as much of like the cause pretense and other things, like the conflict wouldn't necessarily existed as much. But also the hatred of Rome goes pretty far back, so there's
Rome and the Ostrogoths don't exactly get along. They've been fighting for hundreds of years by this point.
Yeah, there's also the issue of that they happen to be residing in Italy, and you happen to also be in Belisarius's path of I'm going to reclaim Rome and all of Italy.
Yeah,
and, no matter how good of a how good or agreeable you are, you are not going to come out okay on the other end of a conflict, a Belisarius conflict.
Yeah, you know, before all of like us doing this, I've never heard of Belisarius, but I heard of Justinian, and I kept thinking, oh wow, Justinian's actually a really good emperor. I'm not so sure now. Like, I mean, he's a good emperor in terms of power. Like, he has Belisarius to do all his bidding. But, like, he's not exactly doing the best of moves here.
Well, I mean, you are only as good as, like, your people actually doing the work.
That is true.
So, Belisarius, you know, he's, you know, Justinian's like, I want to reclaim Rome and Italy. And Belisarius is like, all right, let's do this.
As you wish.
Yeah, let's go land ourselves in Italy and work our way, work our way through and be damned to anyone who's in our way.
Yeah, it's just kind of a crazy, all planets had to align for like, for as bad as like that happened to him. He just really wrong time in history.
Yeah, if he had come like one or two rulerships earlier.
I think the only way as a king to survive in the Ostrogoths at this time, like during his rule, would probably be if you just dug in and did guerrilla warfare like Alfred the Great did over in Britain. I think that's the only way you survive this.
Yeah, that's that invites a lot of trouble too, though.
Yes, it does.
So, all right.
Well, that brings us to the end of another life and reign for an unfortunate soul. Let us know what you thought of Vinicius. Do you think that we were too generous to him? Do you think he was worse than he got? Have you heard of a king who has worse luck? Let us know. Message us via Messenger on Facebook or Instagram at Quest for Power, or you can email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support what we do here, please leave a review or subscribe on whatever platform you use. We will read all 5-star reviews posted to podchaser.com. Link will be in the show notes for your convenience. As always, thank you very much for spending your valuable time with us. Discuss nonsense about history. Next time, we are going to see how the remnants of the Ostrogothic kingdom respond to this decisive blow in the Gothic Wars rage on. Until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king!